everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/ The Delta Flyers.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Robbie.
Hello there, sir. How
hello,
are you?
Hello, yes. Well, I'm kind of duplicating your wardrobe a little while back. You had this on,
I like that shirt.
Yeah, so my shipment came. So thank you to Gemma Bean One, Coffee Mate JC, J Alex Mac, S underscore Steph 85, and Manalyzer 131 for my JC shipper clothing.
JC.
Yeah,
I love that you have, right? J and the C, the big block lettering with their faces. Oh, it's a great shirt.
Invading your personal space since 2371.
It's all so the close funny. Talking. We talk about it all the time, how close they get when they talk.
Yeah, they're so close.
Yeah, and it's always kind of a whisper with a touch on the hand or a lingering caress on the shoulder. JC, all the way.
Yeah. Okay. Tell me a little bit about your skiing day yesterday.
I skied yesterday, Deer Valley. It was beautiful, beautiful sunny day, just really gorgeous. We've had so much snow lately up here. And
that was my question. The coverage is good, right? There were no bare spots anywhere?
No bare spots.
Yeah.
The only disappointment was they're having a big World Cup freestyle competition next week. And so they had a bunch of stuff closed. Getting ready for this freestyle thing. So there was one lift that was closed that I love to go on. And, but it was fun to see the TV towers going up and the big jumps and the mogul. It's a freestyle moguls competition.
Oh, nice.
And jumps and things. So
yeah. And you've got to be, if you're a competitor at that level, man, imagine the amount of fitness regimen that you have going to get down an entire hill of moguls at full speed. It's just like your knees, everything has to be ready to go. It's definitely a grueling task to get to from the top to the bottom of moguls, a bumpy run like that.
The thing for me that I love most about skiing, a lot of people don't ski or don't know much about it, but what I love about it is you take these lifts up to these beautiful spots that are just inaccessible unless you're hiking in the summer, but in the winter inaccessible because of the snow and everything. But you take these lifts up and you just get to see nature in a way that's just so beautiful. And then the adrenaline of kind of sliding down the mountain and not falling. It's exciting. It's beautiful and exciting. And
I think that's part of the allure of these outdoor sports like skiing and golf is really to look at the scenery and to partake of the energy of nature when you're out there, which is you feel invigorated. There's no way you can't, be in awe of God's beauty. You know what I'm saying? It's just
I feel like it's really good medicine to be outside. And it makes me think like on Voyager and Star Trek, these characters, they were stuck on ships.
Yeah.
There was no, thank God for the holiday where you could go and you could take a hike or do something outdoors because you're stuck on a ship. I can't imagine.
If we had no holodecks, I think people would have gone crazy.
Cuckoo.
Go bananas on the Voyager. Yeah, that's the one saving grace of being on a ship lost in the Delta Quadrant is the holodecks. And we had more than one holodeck because you need, multiple holodecks running to service all the members of the crew. What was the temperature when
it was beautiful? It was in the high 40s Fahrenheit. So
nice,
comfortable, sunny day,
And for those of you, for those of you who have not had the opportunity to ski Utah snow is phenomenal. It's so crazy because Colorado is a big skiing state, and I love Colorado resorts. I don't want any Colorado people to take offense to this, but Utah snow, it's just different. It's fluffier. It's lighter. These are two states that are next to each other. So you would assume that they would receive the exact same type of snow, but no, it's completely different. Ulta is my favorite resort. Deer Valley, where Robbie went, is probably the most upscale resort that I know of in this country. Yeah. I mean,
it's
luxurious.
It's really nice. Oh my
goodness. Typically when you stop for lunch on a normal ski resort in the US, your lunch fare, a slice of pizza, a hot dog, a burger, maybe a sub sandwich, and that's the extent of it. But Deer Valley,
they have filet mignon.
It's this whole spread.
French cuisine.
Exactly. We have three French chefs in the back. They're cooking up everything. It's like, what? Some of the nicest food that you can have on the. Did you eat lunch on the mountain?
I did. They had a soup station outside, up by the. It was a mid-mountain stop.
Yeah.
It was up pretty high. And I stopped. They had soup outside with these fresh kettle chips that they cooked fresh
in
the kitchen. So
nice.
The tomato basil soup was delicious and perfect. And then these gourmet, homemade chips that they had were a perfect little side for it. It was great. And I sat outside. Awesome. So I was COVID safe outside all day. Yeah, it was great.
Look at that, folks. Deer Valley, even though they have a little soup station, they don't hand you that little individual packet of chips that's pre-bought from a store.
Oh, no, it was.
They actually made the
fancy. Yes. And the chips were like in a, a porcelain bowl, and the soup was in this china, and everything was very nice. It was lovely.
They have their own greenhouse where they grew the tomatoes.
Yes.
I'm messing with you. That's not true. But that would have been cool too. Mm-hmm. All right. So
what's
are you
this
ready?
Week? Is this week?
You ready for this episode? This is the final episode.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
Season 4. It's crazy. I can't believe
finale.
We're actually there. It's Hope and Fear. That's the name of it. And I can't believe we've actually made it to this point in our review and recap of these episodes. That's unbelievable. End of season 4. Okay. Yeah. I'm excited.
I'm really excited. Season finales are always exciting. So let's go watch it.
Let's go watch it. We will be right back. And all the Patreon patrons out there, please stay tuned for your bonus material. Robbie and I are back from watching Hope and Fear.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I just was telling you before we started recording that this was so dense for me. And it started off, I was feeling like, oh yeah, this is fun. It was pretty easy the first third of this or something to note and kind of watch and analyze. And then it just started getting complicated. And wow. And by the way, I can't believe that neither one of us remembered any of this.
Exactly. And it is interesting how there are certain episodes that I'm going to say I get mired in quicksand where I start slowing down. I have to rewind and it takes me forever.
Yeah.
And then you are able to take a nap, mow the lawn, clip the hedges and show up. And an hour and a half later. And this time I finished half an hour before you did, which is
an hour before you did,
which is very, very, very rare.
And
I didn't feel that this was very dense. This one wasn't dense for me for some reason. I don't know how to explain it, but like I said, each episode is different for each of us. We have different ways of experiencing it when we're watching it. So, we're done. So you finished it finally. Thank you.
We made it through the finale of season 4, which, like I said, I can't believe I didn't remember any of this.
I know.
Yeah. I was over on the Dauntless quite a bit.
You were all over the place. Yes. So I was thinking, wait a minute, you're in the cargo bay over here, with the stuff you guys had from the trade mission. So there's a lot of scenes with Tom Paris. And it wasn't one of the episodes where you and I were kind of on vacation for the year. Well, I was more on vacation than you were, but still, you should have remembered at least one of these.
I should have remembered something. I mean, as I watched it, some moments started coming back vaguely.
Right.
I was trying to remember, this was the end of season 4. I think this was around the time where I was making my second short film. I was going to shoot that during the hiatus. So I had made, after season 2, I made a short film called The Battery, that went to festivals and things like that.
Yeah.
And then after season 4, I'm pretty sure it was around, yeah, season 4. In that hiatus, I made this short film called 9mm of Love.
Correct.
Which also did festivals and things like that.
Yes. And I joined you at Slam Dance for that in Utah.
Yeah. You came up to one of the film festivals. And
yeah.
I think maybe that's why I didn't have such memories about this, because I think I might have been prepping and getting ready to make that short film. So my attention might have been on producing and
sure.
Written that
makes,
one.
And, that makes perfect yeah. sense. That makes yeah. perfect sense. Okay.
That's all that I can come up with.
Let's start up with our poetry synopsis of
Let's Do
Hope and Fear. And here is my haiku for Hope and Fear. Arcturus solves code. Dauntless is our way back home. Janeway sees the truth.
I think you captured the spirit a little better. That was great.
Really?
It was really great.
Then your limerick? Okay.
All right, I'm going to say I actually have 2 limericks. I probably wrote 4 or 5 trying to, like, again, this episode sort of baffled me in odd ways. It stumped me.
Okay.
So I've got 2 limericks.
Yeah, let me hear them both. I want to hear both limericks. Right. Limerick number 1.
Limerick number 1. Janeway and 7 play shoot the frisbee. A way home on the Dauntless appears suddenly. Slipstream might work, but Arcturus is a jerk. And that's the season 4 finale.
That's great. What are you all bummed about? Okay, all right. Let me hear the second one. I love the first one, but let me hear the second one. Go ahead.
Arcturus decodes a message from Starfleet. Slipstream tech seems like a treat. Just kidding, he lied. Then takes Janeway and 7 for a ride. Voyager to the rescue. Isn't that sweet?
Aww. No. I almost thought you were going to end with, isn't that neat?
Neat would have been good. Did
that. Yeah, isn't that sweet? Neat? Isn't that neat? Yes.
I just could not capture to me, there was so much in this episode. There was huge relationship stuff with 7 and Janeway that was constantly underpinning everything.
All right.
And then there was all the science and tech and the getting home and Slipstream. And I don't know, this one. Yeah. Yeah. It was.
I think you're being overly critical about your limerick skills or Rebecca's limerick skills, whoever it is, you know, I think it came out pretty darn good. So
I
think you should be proud and
thank you.
Not.
Thank you.
Yeah. And don't be critical any longer. Okay.
Okay.
I think both of them are effective. I think both of them we shall publish in our final book of limericks
poetry
and haikus.
Collection.
Yeah, our collection, exactly. Okay. Okay. So we'll go with that. All right. Okay. I took the honor of looking up the guest stars because I felt
good.
That you
Thank
may
you.
Not have had time to because of your quicksand issue. So our guest stars are Ray Wise and Jack Shearer. Jack Shearer, we've already seen because he was the admiral that sort of dressed me down in non sequitur when I went back to Earth and I was with your friend Mark, the actor
Mark Kiley. Yes.
Mark Kiley.
One of my dearest friends in the world.
Yes. So Jack Shearer was the Admiral Hayes then, and he's still the Admiral Hayes in the message here. Mm-hmm. Now, you always enjoy looking at the very first credit of all of our guest stars.
What was their first job?
Jack Shearer's very first job.
Oh boy.
Was the TV series Fall Guy with Lee Majors in 1983. Do you remember this? It was about a stuntman, essentially.
Yeah.
It was a series. Yeah. And so Jack appeared in 1983 on the Fall Guy. Now, Ray Wise, I'm just shocked that I don't recall working with Ray Wise. Like the last time I saw Ray Wise was when I was watching you direct on Chuck. And Ray Wise was starring on Chuck.
Forgot he was on Chuck.
Oh, you already forgot
I'll tell you what I do remember about Ray Wise, but go ahead.
All right. What I was going to say was I remember Ray very distinctly because when you were directing that episode of Chuck, we were in that one backlot area. It kind of served as a camping site or something like that, right?
Yeah,
So we were there. And that's when I broke the director's chair that I was sitting in.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that.
The chair broke underneath me and I was so embarrassed. So that was the day. And Ray Wise was working that day. So
that's
why Ray's image is so clear in my mind because I was so embarrassed in breaking that director's chair.
That's Ray, so funny.
Now, Ray Wise, interesting enough, his first credit comes almost 2 decades before Jack Shearer's, because I would assume Jack is older than Ray, right?
I feel I feel like Jack started a little late, because 1983 surprises me too.
Yes, I was a little shocked.
Like, yeah, I feel like he came to television and film a little late. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
All right, so here's his first credit. He did a
Ray
film.
Ray Wise.
Yeah, yes. Ray Wise's very first credit was 1969. This is a year after I was born. You were 5 years old at the time.
Yep.
He did a film called Dare the Devil. Dare the Devil. Okay. Now, right after that, he jumped into a very long-standing role. Mm-hmm. In 1970, he booked a show, a soap opera, actually, called Love of Life. Now, this is a soap opera I've never heard of. I've heard of it.
My mom loved the soaps when I was a little kid, so I do remember.
Then your mom Love would have seen Life. Ray Wise, because he was in 950 episodes of Love of Life.
That's funny.
Can you imagine that? 950. I mean, of course, soap operas do far more, you know, they produce more content than we would, but still, that's an incredible accomplishment.
Wow.
But that was how his career began. And then most recently, Fresh Off the Boat, 2015 to 2020, mm-hmm. that TV series about the Asian Americans living in Florida. And he played the husband of the neighbor. And his resume, both of these guys' resumes are long.
Yeah, I bet. I'll jump in with Ray Wise. I forgot Ray was on Chuck. I totally forgot that because I was so stressed out by this episode. But the one thing I couldn't forget about Ray Wise is around 1993, I did a recurring part on a series I had tested. So I had screen tested for a regular on this series called Second Chances, but I didn't get the job.
Right.
The creators of the show liked me so much, or my audition, that they wanted me to do something in it. So they created a role for me, a recurring role in the series Second Chances. And Ray Wise was in that series.
Oh.
The other person of note in that series was Jennifer Lopez. It was her very first acting job. And I remember when I tested for the show and Ray Wise was in the hallway with some other older actors, he was testing. And some younger women were there, and Jennifer Lopez was in the hallway and she was panicking and freaking out. And I remember I was testing and I knew these showrunners, I'd worked with them before, so I was a little more relaxed.
Yeah.
And I remember going over to Jennifer Lopez and saying, you know, it's okay. Like, I've done this before. And, you know, I remember having a conversation with her and she seemed so sweet and innocent and so not like who she's, you know, we've all learned to see that she's a very confident and very strong person. But my experience in that hallway was she was like shaking, the sides were shaking, and she was nervous. She had been
she was one of the fly girls on In Living Color.
Exactly. Yeah, she had been and anyway, Ray Wise was in the hallway. Getting back to Ray Wise, that series. So I did the show with Ray Wise, and he was awesome. And then the Northridge earthquake hit, and the sets were destroyed because we were shooting out in Northridge.
Right.
Where was where the studios were. And so the sets were destroyed and everything. So they actually canceled the show. Like, they lost everything and just said, so we made like 10 episodes or something. And then they were just
they canceled it?
Yeah.
Wow.
They just didn't have the money to rebuild. And they just were like, you know what? We're not going to make this anymore. So that was my experience with Ray Wise. I connect him to the Northridge earthquake.
Yeah,
earthquake and that series that Jennifer Lopez ended up getting and doing, and that audition, I remember. That's my Ray Wise.
Wait. So Jennifer Lopez did get the role.
She got the role.
And you were on the show with her then? Is that what you're saying?
Okay. Yeah, but by the time we started filming, you know, they tested and then we started shooting the series, she had already gotten the movie Selena. And so she started shooting the movie Selena as we were doing the series, and she blew up like literally like that. And I remember talking to Ray Wise about, oh my God, this young girl is like, she got her first show and now she's doing this movie. And Ray Wise was great. He was, he's just a veteran, awesome guy. And so great to see him on the show. I thought he did a great job in this episode. That's my long story of Ray Wise.
All right, cool. Let's jump into this episode.
So, directed by Rick Colby.
Aha, you win. You win. I selected Livingston.
I thought.
Yeah,
And it was a classic Rick Colby episode in all the great ways, all the way he shoots all these sets is just really dynamic and look cool. And
agreed.
I did note that there were so many writers on this, you know, credited.
Yeah.
Story by Rick Berman, Brandon Braga, Joe Manosky. Teleplay by Brandon Braga, Joe Manosky.
Yeah.
And I did do a little research, even though I know it took me forever to get through this episode, but I always like to look at some of the context of what was going on as the story was developed. And this was, I picked up a very hard episode for them to develop the story. They were under a time crunch that there was at one point Seven was supposed to leave Voyager and take another ship, and then she was going to be like battling with Janeway, like they were going to be in separate shuttles or something. She was going to take a shuttle and they had a whole story developed about it. Was really an episode developed for Janeway and Seven to collide.
Okay.
That was the original concept that Brannon and Joe had for this episode, that they would be like battling Seven and Janeway. Huh. And so you can feel that in this. I could feel that in this, the development of the story.
The battling was there. I also want to say that it's rare to see Berman's name on story by as well, right? You don't see his name that often, so.
Well, what the reason that is, from what I could pick up, is they had trouble figuring out this finale. Okay. That there were a lot of versions. They kept rewriting the outline and kept rewriting and rewriting. And at one point, I think Brannon had gone into Rick's office and said, "We need some help. Like, we cannot figure out this story. Everybody's got different ideas and it's just not coming together." And I think Rick was the one that said, "Okay, what if you break it down this way?" And don't reveal, you know, use this bad guy. There was some other alien they had in mind. It was it was a much more complicated story and a very complicated journey to write the script. So but that was a cool thing to
nice to research there. Okay,
yes sir.
Let's jump into our play-by-play now.
Okay, so here we are in the holodeck. Seven of Nine and Janeway are playing this game called Velocity, which no one's ever discussed or mentioned, but they're playing Velocity. Maybe that was what the original concept of like battling each other turned into, this holodeck game.
Right. I don't
know. Seems like the captain is winning all these games and Seven is very frustrated.
She's
very frustrated, wants to play more, wants another shot. Janeway's like, "No, I got to get out of here." By the way, Seven's hair is really big. I wrote down Jerry's hair looks like a 1950s big hairdo.
Agreed.
And she had some Borg tech on her arm that we've never seen. Like,
yeah, there's an implant on her arm because we don't see her arms ever. And so now she's wearing some version of a tank top, I guess, some athletic top. And we see the arm. But here's the crazy thing. Her skin is still Borgy modeled underneath, like her implant that's on her face. It's regular skin color all around that implant, on both of those implants, right? The one over her eyebrow and the one on the side, the little chicken claw on the side of her face. They're just on her body and it's normal skin color. But the one on her arm is just, it's almost like it's not healed all the way.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It was surprising to see that.
Most definitely.
Janeway says, "I got to get out of here." And Janeway at the end is like, you know, "Come on, just be a good sport. Like, be a good sport about losing. It's not a big deal." The most important thing is Janeway talks about instinct.
Right. That is intuition. Intuition.
Intuition. Yes. Sorry.
She does talk about that, which is the important part of this scene. But I also felt when she said, you know, be a good sport, she was kind of digging into Seven a little bit with that comment. You know, I felt like it could have been a little lighter than the way she delivered.
Yeah, could have been. Mm-hmm. I mean, definitely this, you know, it was setting up that they're going to be battling this whole episode.
Oh, yeah.
But the intuition is really important because she does hit. Janeway seems to fire without even looking at this thing and win the last game. And Seven's like, "How did you do that? Like, you didn't even look at it." And she tries to explain in a way that a Borg might understand. It's intuition. Intuition is when you anticipate what it's done before, you kind of feel it, she just tries to explain it in a logical way somehow, what intuition is. And Seven's like, "That's implausible."
Well, she says it's a human fallacy. Intuition is a human fallacy. So
interesting little scene. And then we find Janeway in the mess hall next.
Mm-hmm. Captain's log. She talks about that she's been working on decrypting that message from Starfleet Command 5 months ago. And five is a number that is used twice in this scene. So 5 months ago is when this Starfleet message came through that she can't decipher. Chakotay comes in, and this is when Janeway figures out or learns what time it is. It's 0500 hours. So it's 5 a.m. Message from 5 months ago. He reports that Tom and Neelix are heading back from a trade mission. In my notes, I wrote Tom, but I guess it auto-corrected to Tok, T-O-K. So I immediately thought, he reports that TikTok and Neelix are heading back from a trade mission with supplies and also a guest who helped out with some type of trade negotiation because the universal translator wasn't working. And this guest is really someone who is quite helpful and is asking for a bit of a ride to the next star system. So Janeway acknowledges this and says, okay, I approve.
She talks about decrypting this message. She's obsessed with decrypting the message that we got from Starfleet. And she's tried 50 different decryption algorithms. She's getting nothing. And if she could just solve this, they could be home tomorrow. She says, you know, who knows? This could be the way home. This could be a map to a wormhole or a way to get home, or it could be a recipe for a pound cake. What would be so bad if it were a recipe for a pound cake?
Catherine, I love Janeway. Pound cake. I like
pound cake. Like, who doesn't like a pound cake? Who doesn't like cake?
Pound cake? Come on. Yeah,
so what's so wrong with that? I don't know.
Hey, but see, if you're overseas, is it a kilo? Is it a kilogram cake? Kilogram cake?
Yeah.
A kilo cake.
Well, pound cake comes from, the recipe is like a pound of butter or something.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
Or a pound. I don't know. That's I think that's where it comes from.
Okay.
Pound cakes are delicious.
Yes, they are. She also says to Chakotay that Seven and her have been butting heads.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of this is, I just keep watching like a mother-daughter relationship going on.
Yes.
It's just mother and 13-year-old daughter. It's so close to that. It's so many parallels are going on there. And that's the end of that scene.
I did notice in that scene, by the way, that, that Rick Colby shot a lot of profile close-ups. That when Kate and Robert Beltran were talking to each other, that they were, you know, normally the camera's looking at both of their eyes, but this was profile close-ups, which I thought was interesting because usually a director will use profile close-ups for a scene where someone is battling, you know, where they're butting heads.
Right.
But this was not a scene where Chakotay and Janeway were butting heads. So I thought it was interesting. It reminded me how much Rick Colby was kind of experimental, much more experimental than most of our directors.
Well, maybe he wanted to keep the theme going in scenes that didn't have Seven.
So yeah, maybe
kind of understood that. So when you're saying, were these singles or were these
these were singles? These were singles, but instead of coming around to see both of
their eyes,
to see both of Kate's eyes, he was off to the side in a profile. And so, I thought it was an interesting choice because it's unconventional for a scene like that. So next we go to cargo bay.
Yes. We see Tom ordering everyone around, move this, this goes here, this goes there. And then you pick up what you act like you don't know what it is, but it's clearly a jellyfish.
It's a jellyfish. By the way, Chakotay sees this jellyfish thing and he's like, what is this? And Paris takes it. First of all, why am I touching it?
Why are you touching that thing?
Why am I touching this alien thing? Because I literally say, I don't know what this is. Well, then why did you touch it? But I hold this thing and he's like, I don't know what this is. He goes, Neelix, which is kind of fun, calling for Neelix.
Oh, yeah.
And we cut over to see Neelix introducing this new friend to Janeway.
Yeah.
And he says he was negotiating with someone on this planet when his universal translator went out and wasn't working and they couldn't communicate. And Arturus came over and saved him.
Right.
By translating all of the conversation, both sides. So this alien obviously can communicate without, they're very smart or something because they can understand every, you know, languages without a communicator. So, or a translator. So I thought that was kind of cool.
It is cool. And I like the fact they call him the living universal translator. That is a nice label to have, I suppose. But he does explain to Janeway that he sees patterns. He can see things I like to call it, he can see the matrix. He can see what is happening. And so that helps him with languages and with all kinds of things. Right. And this is when Janeway sort of gets a bit of an idea.
Yes. And she's thinking, see that light bulb over her head.
Yeah, the light bulb turns on.
Really? Maybe you can help us out.
Yes. With our message. And
by the way, he's very, this alien Arturus at this point, I made a note that he's smiling a lot, that Ray Wise played him as a very friendly,
accommodating,
easygoing very smiley guy. And normally we don't, even if aliens are friendly, they're usually more business.
Right.
But he was very friendly and seems, which is part of his whole con, we'll come to realize later on.
Correct. But he also has probably one of the biggest heads of any alien.
Had a giant head. Yeah. It goes way back.
Head. Yeah.
And I thought the makeup was really cool until, I got to say, later on, I noticed quite a few times where you could see where the glue sort of held it. And when he got a little more animated and things like that, you could see the line where the facial glue stopped and the big foamy headpiece started.
Wow, look at you. Sort of
bumped me a little bit.
Maybe this is why it took you so much extra time to review this episode. You caught all these small little facts that I did not see at all.
It's a great makeup. It's a really great makeup, and usually our makeup department is great with those details and making sure that there's not a seam that you don't see where the piece sort of stops. And,
correct.
And, you know, but this time I did notice it, and maybe it was just because Ray Wise started getting very animated later in the episode. So
could be.
Anyway, we go to Astrometrics next, and Janeway, Seven, and Arturus are looking at all this this encrypted data stream that they're trying to figure out. And Arturus, he says, yes, this is definitely damaged. And while he's analyzing it, he's like, you're Borg, aren't you? He notices Seven's cortical implant. And she says, well, I was, but I'm no longer a part of the collective. And then Janeway asks, well, has the Borg ever met his race? And she says, yes, we knew them as species 116, but we have not been able to assimilate them yet. And Janeway gives her a look like, oh, come on, don't be rude. It was a great little moment in
the side
in the back.
She's that's like, a great
why
look.
Are you threatening this guy? He's so friendly and you're being a jerk.
Again, it was a mom looking at her teenage daughter. Mm-hmm. A teenage daughter just said something inappropriate. The mom shot her this look like, come on. Come on, kid. Don't go there. You know, don't embarrass the family. Great look, though. Really good.
It was a good look. We do see Admiral Hayes footage. We start to see some of that. Seven sees a spatial grid, like a map up there. And Janeway goes up and she says, yeah, this is the coordinates of a sector nearby, about 10 light years away. Maybe this is, they want us to go here.
Yeah.
And so we cut to the bridge and they're approaching these coordinates that Arturus helped them decrypt some of this. So they get this map at least so far. And they approach these coordinates, and on the view screen, they see a ship.
And the signature is a Starfleet signature.
The warp signature is Starfleet.
And it's very advanced looking. I liked the design.
Oh, I thought it was super cool.
I thought, ooh, this thing looks very aerodynamic and just different from any other Starfleet ship we've seen so far. Yeah. The reaction from Harry, happy. Harry is happy as a clam. You can see him smiling. Then you cut to Janeway's face. Not so much. She's not too happy.
She's very stone-faced, sort of bumped me at this point. I was like, what is going on? Like, why is Kate playing it this way? Yeah. Makes sense later on because she's very skeptical
skeptical.
We come back on the bridge and they try hailing them. No response, no life signs. By the way, I made a note, Rick Colby shoots the bridge so well.
He does.
The way he stages the movement in one line, you know, hands off to another.
Really good.
The really tense sort of really stacked up frames where we get lots of information in the frame as low angles, foreground elements. It was really cool looking.
Agreed.
You know, they see that this Starfleet ship and they don't know what to make of it. And Janeway thinks the answer has got to be in this transmission. So she says to Arturus, you know, I need your help to decode the rest of the mission. And he steps down on the bridge near her. And I made a note, he's close talking. Like, it's really awkward. Why did we do that on Star Trek so much? Like, we would come up and just kind of talk right next to each other. Even the guest stars did it. It must have been the directors or something.
I don't know. But
because he came up in a really creepy way right next to her. Chakotay would be mad.
I think you could even see her hair like blow in from his breath. Like that's how close she that's how close Arturus was to Janeway.
Yeah.
But you're right. Close talking it was.
Close talking. Anyway, she says, "Can you help me? Let's decode the rest of this message." And she says to Chakotay to take Tom and Tuvok over and secure this Starfleet vessel. Go over there and secure it.
You're right. Not Tom and Harry, but Tom and Tuvok.
Tom and Tuvok. Yeah.
So now we're on the Dauntless Bridge.
Yep.
With Tom and Tuvok and not Harry. And Chakotay. And then I was bummed. I was like, what? I am not on the away team? Fine.
You didn't even remember this.
It doesn't matter. Well, you guys detect that there's power fluctuations in the warp core. So that's the first sort of something's going on, right? Like, what's happening here? It's interesting. And then we go to the engineering room of the Dauntless, and you guys discover this is not a typical warp core. This is something that nobody's really seen before. And you guys discover that it's a quantum slipstream drive.
Yeah.
And while you guys are checking it out, the vessel powers up. Who pushes the button randomly? What was that? You?
No, nobody pushes it.
It's okay, like it just started. It was on auto. It was on auto start. Yeah. So
they come over. They check the panels. They realize it's the USS Dauntless. It's got registry NX01A.
Yeah.
Like it seems legit, right?
Yeah.
Everything.
It looks
good. It even says that it was launched on Stardate 51472.
Right.
So everything seems legit.
Yeah.
But this engine is very different. You're mm-hmm. right. They don't recognize it at all. Paris, you know, when they're in the engine room, by the way, the engine room, it looked like those static electricity balls
that
you used to see it like
Spencer's.
Yeah. Spencer's Gifts had them. You could buy them.
Sure.
That's what the engine looked like. Just a big version of that.
That's probably what it was.
Yeah.
They said, get down to Spencer's.
Yeah.
Go buy their static electricity ball. That's going to be the quantum slipstream drive.
That's the quantum slipstream.
Do you remember that bridge? Is it ringing a bell now that you
Well, when I watched the episode, what I did remember, I vaguely remember, being on that set. What I remember most of all, and I made this note right here, that Rick really wanted these low angles because we were standing on that platform looking down at the static electricity ball.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of cool red, you know, colored lights and things. And he wanted the camera down there, real low angle with lots of foreground stuff. And I remember it was hard to get the camera in there. So I remember and panning around, and we had to really kind of thread the needle to hit a mark.
Right.
I remember the technical, you know, aspects of shooting in that set, because it was tricky because of where he wanted to put the camera.
Okay, so that's for the engineering room, but what about for the bridge before the scene before this? Do you recall the advanced bridge? No?
Vaguely.
Okay.
Vaguely. I feel like, you know, spoiler alert, I'm going to jump to later on when it decloaks and we see that it's a different ship. I do remember being on a set like that where we had to shoot a bunch of stuff and then we had to go away and shoot other stuff while they changed it over to look like the alien ship, because it sort of decloaked. So I do remember scenes where they had to sort of, the schedule was weird because of that.
Right.
Like, I don't know why I'm remembering more of the shooting aspects than the story aspects of
one. But, that is okay.
Yeah.
Now we have a bit of a montage, not a montage, but they jump back and forth between the Dauntless Bridge and Voyager's Bridge. Mm-hmm. And at this point, Kim is in command of the bridge.
I know. I put down Harry in the captain's chair.
Yes. Finally.
Look at that.
Finally.
Look at you.
Look at that. Short term.
Didn't you? Promotion. You were in the captain's chair once before, though.
Yeah. I've been there a couple times. Usually for the night shift. When nothing happens.
I don't think Paris was ever in the captain's chair that I can remember.
Yes, you were.
Was I?
Yeah.
Did we cover it already?
Yeah.
Maybe once.
We did.
Maybe once.
We did. You got up and...
Oh, yeah. That's right.
You acted captainly. You had a few captainly moments.
Once. Yeah, I think you've been in that chair more than
I've been more. I have been in the chair more than you have. That is true. That is correct. For sure.
Growing businesses and finance professionals, you need Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software. It's powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card, which helps growing companies scale with credit lines of $500 to $15 million, automated expense reports, and as many virtual cards as you need. For a limited time, get $500 when you get started with Bill Spend and Expense. Request a demo at bill.com/get500.
Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank, member FDIC.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So you guys have basically just shot away and we can't even see you on sensors. You're gone. So then it takes us, I think they said 3 days or 2 days for us to finally catch up to you, which what you guys did in one, like 10 seconds, wherever you end.
Well, this, Dauntless takes off on autopilot. Yeah. Like, we don't know what's going on. It takes off, it flies off. And by the way, the space shot of it, Dauntless taking off, to me, I felt like it was too similar to Warp Drive. Okay. I wish that they had done something very different visually to make it look like, right, you know, whatever the deflectors did to help create this slipstream thing. I wish it looked a little different because it felt very much like Warp Drive to
me. That's valid.
But yes, we do. The thing takes off on autopilot, taking Chakotay, Tuvok, and Tom, and Harry on the bridge goes, bridge to Janeway, they're gone. And Harry's in shock. And then we cut to the Dauntless with our threesome, our three amigos, flying through what I like to call the tube of space. Slipstream looks like a sausage tube of space that is flying through.
The sausage tube of space?
Yes. That's what Slipstream looks like. For those on the audio podcast only, just imagine a sausage tube of space. And that's what Slipstream looks like.
I don't know if people want to imagine that. I don't know. That might be,
if you're inside a sausage TMI. Tube.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So it's flying along through the tube of space.
Yes. And it finally stops somehow. I don't even know how you guys stopped it. It just stopped. I guess auto stopped.
Tom explains the energy from the quantum drive is being rerouted through the main deflector.
Yeah.
And then I like Tuvok's line where he goes, "Fascinating. Can you make it stop?" It was such, I wrote it down because it made me laugh out loud. Tim Russ's reading of, because I'm telling him, I'm picking this up and I'm picking that up. And he's like, fascinating. Can you make it stop?
It's almost as good as the line earlier when you guys first beam on that Dauntless bridge and you're like, wow. And he goes, wow, indeed.
Yes, exactly. He's very... He's so very sarcastic dry in this episode.
He is. Tuvok's hilarious.
But yeah, it does come to a stop. Somehow Paris has made it stop.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because later on, it's a big deal for Harry and B'Elanna to figure out how to make it stop. But somehow Paris did. But he can't remember, I guess.
Yeah.
which fits the actor that played him, who can't remember anything. So
short-term memory loss for Tom and Robbie McNeil.
Yes. But somehow he makes it stop. They're back in normal space. And Tuvok says, in that quick second that we just traveled, we traveled over 15 light years.
15 light years.
So this thing's fast.
It is so super fast.
Then we go to space. We see a cool shot of Voyager approaching the Dauntless, which I thought was kind of cool.
I like that shot.
Captain's log, she says, we've spent 2 days at high warp to catch what they did in a few seconds, 30 seconds.
Yeah, very quick.
2 days at high warp to catch them, but we did catch them. And then we go to the briefing room they're watching the video of Admiral Hayes.
Correct. Well, he basically says like, hey, we've sent this ship out there for you and this is your way home.
Yep.
You'll have enough, you know, provisions and everything. It's all good to go. So we can't wait to see you. So, you know, we're excited and Harry is super excited.
Yeah.
Seven is a little bit, you know, she's being a teenager and she's kind of snappy in this in this scene, especially towards Harry. There is talk of modifying Voyager for slipstream travel so that we can, I guess, kind of tow, or not tow, but bring Voyager along. You know, the plan is don't scuttle the ship.
Don't leave our ship. Leave that's ship what Seven says. Yeah.
Tuvok does stay behind after everyone leaves the meeting, and Janeway expresses her reservations. She says that everything is just a little too convenient. How everything happened.
She's like, why am I not more enthusiastic? Yeah. And Tuvok says, perhaps my mental discipline is rubbing off on you.
Yes.
Which I liked.
I did like that line. Yeah. But then they pinpoint the fact that everything started when Arturus arrived. Yeah. So Arturus is sort of the jumping off point. Or he began everything that began as everything that started happening happened when he showed up. So there are some suspicions there. Janeway only expresses these concerns to Tuvok. So these two know about what's going on. She doesn't really say it to anybody else. This is our first red flag.
Yeah, first red flag. So they talk, and then she says, keep an eye on Arturus. Like, you know, I don't trust him.
Yeah. Oh, here's where the montage happens, right?
This is where the montage happens. Yes. Yeah, there's a big montage between Janeway and Seven, really.
Right. But you see Dauntless Bridge, Astrometrics, the corridor, Janeway's ready room, cargo bay where Seven's regeneration
Regeneration
is,
pod right? is yep
and yep. all of those locations with a are in a montage with personal logs from Janeway and Seven back and forth and which we've never done before.
Like this, and it was back and forth between the two of them. Again, I go back to this, like how this story developed. I think this was supposed to be very much a Janeway Seven episode,
right?
Even more than it is. Originally, I think it was all them. It sort of developed to include more of us. But when this montage starts, there's a space shot where we see over the Dauntless with Voyager behind, a really cool angle, and you can see inside the windows of the Dauntless. Do you remember that? Like,
no,
it was really cool. I was like, that's a very cool detailed
nice
vis effects where they added all these windows. It's a classic Dan Curry detail. Because Dan Curry came on to Chuck with me for 5 years. And
he sure did.
And that's a detail. He'd always talk about, well, what do we see inside that window? Do we need to shoot an extra element and film? Because we want to keep it alive. It's not a painting. We want it to feel three-dimensional.
As realistic as possible.
Yeah, I thought that was very cool. But in this montage, Janeway's on the Dauntless Bridge at one point, and she sort of walks by. And do you see you and me in the background?
All the stuff you found. What are we doing in the background, man? What are we doing
during the voiceover? She's on the Dauntless Bridge hitting some buttons, and as she walks and kind of glances into the Dauntless Bridge, you and I are on the Dauntless Bridge. You're sitting down, and I'm standing by you, and we're both sort of laughing.
Down laughing with you. What?
Yeah, and I made a note. I was like, what joke were we telling? Because I'm sure that we were being background in the scene over this montage. And I'm sure I said some dirty joke or something, or you did. One of us said something, because the laugh was very real. It didn't look like we were, you know, faking it in any way. So
you didn't really tell dirty jokes, though. You were more of a, no. I don't even know, observational comedy. You know, you would just see it as whatever was going on around you, and you would comment on it.
Yeah, it was probably something like that.
Who's doing the most laughing? Was it me or was it you?
It was both of us. I don't know what we were laughing about, but clearly
noticed that the camera was on us, though? Wouldn't we have?
I think it was supposed to be like everybody's happy, they're going home. So I think it fit the scene.
Okay. All right.
I think it fit the scene.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I've got to watch it again now just because you told me this. Okay.
I noticed in this also that Seven in the hallway was filled during this montage with a bunch of our regular background.
Yeah.
And it was great to see all these regular background there. And they all were laughing. Same thing. Everybody's excited. They think we're going home. We're going to get home real soon. I love the close up in the ready room when Janeway's talking about, maybe I'll connect with my old friends. And we cut to a close up of Seven in the regeneration alcove, and she's like, will she be able to adapt to human civilization? So they're both sort of pondering the consequences or the reality of getting home.
Yeah, for sure. Now we end up in a scene in Dauntless engineering room, Seven, yeah. Torres and Harry are there. Seven mm-hmm. and Torres start talking about getting back home, and there's, you know, there's hesitation from Seven, and Seven even brings up the fact that, you know, you seemed pretty excited to get back there, especially since, and it's shocking to me, it's surprising to me, Seven says, because you will be facing charges for being a Maquis, yeah. for a member yeah. of the Maquis, and doesn't that affect you in any way? And Taurus sort of answers, well, if it was up to me and spending the rest of my life in the Delta Quadrant or facing the music and, you know, facing the yep. charges that I've faced, I'll take the charges back home than
yeah.
being in Delta Quadrant. So,
and then she says something to Seven, like, you know, well, yeah, I'll be in trouble, but so will you, Seven, for being a bore or something. And then she right. goes, that was a joke. You yeah. need to work on your sense of humor, Seven,
yeah.
which is... It was a long conversation with B'Elanna and Seven, which we don't see often. So I was really happy to see that scene. I thought it was really fun to watch.
Yeah, it was a good scene.
When B'Elanna leaves, then Seven goes over and talks to Harry. And Harry's excited. And he's trying to get her excited. And she just has this cold stare with Harry. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, Harry's like, you know, Seven, it won't be the same without you.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And it has a really nice moment. And she just is cold and...
Oh, no, she smiles cold. Then. That's when, after he says that, she does give me
did
a smile.
She?
Yes.
She gave that's you a little smile?
I warm didn't pick smile that up. From Seven when Harry oh. tries to say, it won't be the same without you. That's like the only time where she's kind of comfortable and a
yeah,
little
she's
bit
cold
happy.
The rest
she's cold
of the
rest of the scene.
I didn't
yes.
catch that little moment, but
you
might have
been
important.
So busy writing notes down, you
probably.
Didn't see the smile. So
yeah.
it's a
nice
split second.
It worked. You got to
see?
Her.
That's
nice.
Why we're co-hosts for this thing. Whatever I miss, you pick up. Whatever you miss, I pick up.
And then you find a weird panel. You get a yeah. reading on their tricorder.
I
and
do.
You go over, you pull this panel out, and there's a weird, the tricorder sort of sparks the panel. It like reacts
yeah. Yeah.
really weird. And so you call Tuvok.
Yeah.
And hey, we got to check this out. I picked up something
unusual.
Unusual yeah. is what you said, right?
He says, I'll be right over. Yep. Don't worry. We jump to Astrometrics. Mm-hmm. And Seven basically says that she does not want to return to Earth. Mm-hmm. She says this to Janeway. And Janeway says, this is about your fear. You know, you are afraid to go back to Earth. And this is the scene where Janeway discovers the real message from Admiral Hayes.
Yeah.
And that message is basically, we've tried everything. We cannot figure out a way to get you guys back sooner. You know, good luck is the essence of this message.
Yeah,
good luck.
She finds she's, yeah, Janeway is suspicious of that first message that Arturus helped her get. And so she's
right.
digging deeper.
Right.
At the end of the scene, she does find that buried real yeah. message, which is good luck, that we can't help you at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in the middle of this scene, I found that this scene was really important because Janeway lays out, like, you know, you're becoming human and you're right. afraid, and trust me, you're going to get home to Earth mm-hmm. and you're going to see the humanity that you're starting to look. And yeah. Seven just goes hard at Janeway in this.
She does.
She goes really, really hard, mm-hmm. criticizing and just cutting and mm-hmm. saying really harsh things. Mm-hmm. I was shocked, actually. I was yeah. like, wow, the yeah. writers really put a lot of harsh stuff in Seven's mouth.
Yeah, didn't
scene.
She say that she wasn't going to go through with doing any of her job or anything like that? She was done. Isn't this a scene where she says that?
Well, Janeway does say, you know, we've given you a lot, Seven. It's time that you do something in return, yeah. which I was like, whoa. So they're both kind of sniping at each other,
yeah.
but
Seven
I felt
says,
like
I
Seven
have been doing a lot.
Yeah,
I have been
said,
doing a lot.
I have on many occasions, but this time I refuse.
I refuse.
And Janeway's like, well, what are you going to do? You're going to stay here by yourself? How will
she's
you survive?
Like, yeah, she's
like,
she'll I don't say, know.
She says, I'll survive. And Janeway goes, on what? Borg perfection?
Yeah. That
goes, was
a good, look at that
she goes,
line.
Precisely. Yes. And
ooh.
It was a heated conversation that, again, going back, because I was wondering how this story came about. And
yeah.
again, I think it was they had a whole different idea about this story that mm-hmm. was all Seven and Janeway, like, battling out in space mm-hmm. by themselves or something.
Yeah.
And so these ideas and these themes came out in these scenes as they were working.
Right.
But yeah, at the end of the scene, they find the real message and Arturus has lied.
Yeah.
So Janeway says, let's go get weapons. She calls Tuvok, says, watch Arturus, but don't tip her hand.
Right.
We're coming over with weapons. We go to the Dauntless Bridge
mm-hmm.
and Arturus is walking around and he goes to push a button and B'Elanna says, no, don't do that. She goes, you almost started the slipstream drive. And he goes, oh, he plays innocent. Oh, right. Really?
Right.
And then he speaks Klingon to her, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, he did.
Basically
he did.
Saying thank you, I think, is what he was saying.
But the other important part about the scene is when Janeway does arrive, she tells all the away teams, all the personnel to head back to the ship. Okay. Yep. So she's like, get out of here. Everyone get out of here. She confronts Aturis is dodging it pretty much. You know, he's not, I didn't do any of this.
Dodges, and then he blames Seven.
Yeah.
Seven. Yeah. She tampered with it. Right. She's sabotaging. She doesn't want to go back, which actually is a pretty good lie because it would make sense to Janeway. She might buy it, but he can tell she's not buying it. So he goes to rip a panel open.
Yeah.
And try to get this lever, and a security team grabs him, and there's a bit of a struggle.
He got shot by a phaser first, which really didn't shot do by the phaser. Anything. He was like, it singed his clothes, but it didn't really do anything to him. Then they come over, the two security detail. It's the one person who I've never seen before, the female, the lady, and the other guy we have seen before, that background actor. I've kind of joked and said, that's Ed Sheeran, you know, the singer. Right. So Ed Sheeran and the new security detail officer try to pry him loose, but evidently he has extreme strength. Like he's stronger than Tuvok.
Yeah, stronger than two of our security, but they're holding him back and he just gets his fingers on the edge of the lever. And as he falls back, he pulls this lever.
Right.
And the ship decloaks.
Yeah.
On the bridge, which was very cool, transforms into this alien ship, which I loved. It was cool red lights and the panels all look super cool.
Yeah.
And as people are beaming out now, because Janeway had said, evacuate the ship, I'll tell all the security, you know, the what do you call them, repair teams to evacuate.
Yeah.
And some of our security people start beaming out. But Harry says, he's trying to deflect our transporter locks. And so some of them beam out, but Janeway and Seven basically start to beam out, but he's now deflected it and they can't. So he's got them trapped. And they seem to go into slipstream mode.
Yep.
And he's got Janeway and Seven.
Right.
And we've lost them.
Correct. So on Dauntless's bridge, passage of time after the commercial break, Arturis blames Janeway for the destruction of his species, essentially just, you know, you're the reason, you are the reason why I don't hold her at fault because she's just a drone doing, she was a drone doing what she had to do, kind of a thing. Right. So the Borg are not at fault. It's you, Janeway, you made the deal. You ended up eliminating 8472
and his people had outwitted the Borg for centuries, he said.
Right.
But then when she made the deal with the species 8472.
Actually, the deal was with Borg, right? To help the Borg defeat 8472. That's the deal.
Yes.
And 8472 was the last hope of Arturis's people because 8472 was winning the battle against the Borg. And once Voyager intervened and basically screwed up the whole prime directive and that's how we have the end of his people, like only 10,000 left.
10 to 20,000 survived. He said he escaped with one vessel alone by himself, and he blames Janeway, not Seven, for this. You know, she said, you know, the Borg are not the, you know, none of this, they were doing what Borg do,
right?
But you're the reason, you know, we had everything in balance and we're managing it until you made this deal.
Yeah.
So he said he watched and waited for months to try to lure them to his vessel.
Yeah.
And he's going to take them back and let them get assimilated by the Borg.
Yeah. And like his plan was the entire crew was going to be assimilated by the Borg. All of us. Yeah. But he's satisfied with two. Two is good enough. If he can get Janeway and Seven, that's fine.
And he says to Seven, he says, you know, Seven, you should thank me because this is what you wanted all along.
You've wanted to go back to the collective, right?
Yeah, which is an interesting thing because she's like a teenage, petulant teenage child.
Yes.
She's been telling mom, I just want to go back to the Borg. I don't want to go play with my friends. I don't like you anymore. And he just wants revenge. Yeah. He just wants revenge.
Yeah, that's all he cares about.
So now we go to the Voyager Bridge and it's shaking, everything's shaking here. And Chakotay had asked Paris to use the warp core modifications for Slipstream that they were working on and try to go after them. So they clearly have gotten this going, and now they're going at Slipstream, or they're about to go at Slipstream. They're breaking through right now. They finally break through. Harry says, you know, hull integrity is going down, everything's shaking, and they break through into Slipstream. It does work. And then Paris says he'll align their course to match the Slipstream of the alien ship. So they're on the hunt. So now we know Voyager's on the chase. They just got to catch up to them. Mm-hmm. Then we go to the alien brig. Seven and Janeway are there, and they're trying to come up with a escape plan or something. And they realize, well, the Borg, if you Borg drones could just walk through this force field, and you've still got some Borg
adapt.
In you.
Yeah,
if you could adapt. Right. Exactly. So if they could adjust her cranial implant, maybe she could use her Borg tech to get walk right out of this brig. So yeah, Janeway takes her comm badge and kind of removes a microfilament out of her comm badge. She says, would a microfilament work? I think so. So she takes the microfilament out of her comm badge and starts tweaking the implant. And then
here is the dialogue where Janeway begins talking to Seven while she's adjusting her implant. Yeah. Uh-huh. She says, Seven, I've been hard on you at times, but it was never out of anger or regret that I brought you on board. I'm your captain, and that means I can't always be your friend. Understand? And that part, God, how much does that sound like, I'm your mom, but I can't always be your friend. Understand? And then Seven responds with, no, but if we are assimilated, we will be one. And I will understand you perfectly, which is hilarious, right? And then she, and Janeway does not know that this is Seven's attempt at being funny. And then she, you know, Seven, you know, cues her in on that.
Yeah.
But it is a, to me, it's hilarious.
I was making a joke.
Yeah. Yes. It's, and it is a very funny joke because it is so true. If they're both assimilated, she's going to know exactly what was in Janeway's mind at that moment. I just love that dialogue. It was really good. That's why I wrote it all down.
And in this scene, this is kind of their coming together scene, or a bit of their like mending this
resolution.
This fight that really blew up. I mean, I thought the dialogue in the Astromatrix scene was the harshest. It was the harshest dialogue I've heard, particularly from Seven. I think the words, like I said, the words they put in Seven's mouth were just, I don't know how you come back from that, but
painful to watch.
Yeah, it was very uncomfortable. And this is the this is the healing scene where Seven admits, you were right. I was afraid. It was fear.
Right.
And I don't know where I belong. And so they both kind of admit some truth there and come back together a bit, a little bit.
Yeah.
And then Seven walks through this force field. She puts her hand through first. It worked. Mm-hmm. And she walks through like a Borg drone. Right. And up on the Dauntless Bridge, Arturus picks up that they're escaping.
Right.
He gets a little warning.
They head to the engine room. They head to the engine room and they punch a few buttons and they realize they're locked out by Arturus. Mm-hmm. He knows that they've gotten out. So Janeway comes up with a brilliant idea. She says, send a power surge into the starboard thrusters. The starboard thrusters, which in essence is going to tilt that ship out of whack so it's not flying straight. And I love the end of this. She tells Seven, she goes, we have a game of velocity scheduled for tomorrow. I expect you to keep the appointment. So this is kind of like, you know, I have hope that this is going to work.
This is
going
to work.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a nice scene.
Yeah, we go up to the Dauntless Bridge where Arturus is trying to, the kidnapper's taking him. And we see the ship turn, you know, crazy. Mm-hmm. And I made a note here that the way that they do these shots, so our set was still flat on the ground. It was not, the set was not tipped or anything.
Right.
They have to get a special head for the camera that the camera's mounted on called a Cartoni head. Mm-hmm. And I remember learning about this on Star Trek. It's a Dutch head. So it usually cameras will tilt forward and backward or pan right and left, but they won't twist one way or the other.
Correct.
That's a third axis that you need a special tool for. Mm-hmm. And so the head that we use was called a Cartoni head, was the brand. It was an Italian made camera mount. Mm-hmm. But you could take the camera and do you remember that head when they would sometimes take the camera and turn it side to side?
Well, we didn't use it that often, but
we didn't use it that often. And when I directed, I remembered that was a special request. We didn't carry that as our part of our
kit. Did you use a Cartoni head on one of your episodes?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So you had to ask for it. It was a special rental. You had to get approval.
Right.
But I loved how he used the Cartoni head on the Dauntless Bridge. And I also loved how Ray Wise was doing all his own stunts. He was falling down.
Yeah, that was him climbing falling up. And getting up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good job, Ray.
I thought that was really, really good. But he does recover.
He regains control
mm-hmm. and gets it back on course. So it didn't quite work.
Janeway pleads with him, doesn't she? She's like, listen, you know.
She comes onto the bridge. She's like,
You don't have to be the one that's sacrificing. You could be the sole person of your species to keep the legacy of your people alive. You know, come on, you know, we can stop this craziness right now. And Arturus then punches a few more buttons and he basically destroys navigational controls on his own ship. So you can't turn it around.
Nobody can change it anymore.
It's just going to keep going straight. Yeah.
Yeah.
We jump back to the Voyager's bridge. Chakotay then fires on the Dauntless, which disables the shields and essentially allows us to beam Janeway and Seven out. Exactly. It's a really sad shot of Arturus sitting in his chair like that, just heading right into the end of his life.
I thought, well, you see, so they fire on it, they beam. By the way, Janeway continues to beg him
to the very last second. She's like, come on.
She says, it's not too late. And he says something like, well, it's too late for you. And he turns around with this double-barreled weapon
to fire on her
just as she's beaming out. They beam her out literally as the weapon fires at her.
Right.
So he doesn't kill her.
Nope.
And then we cut out to space and we see Voyager kind of change course and we see
a different sausage tube.
We see two sausage tubes. Yes. Yes. So the slipstream turns from one sausage tube into two sausage tubes and Voyager goes off to the right and the Dauntless heads straight on its course because navigation is destroyed.
I thought Voyager went to the left. That's what it looked like to me. It took the left tube, I thought.
Oh. I thought that was the Dauntless going in the straight tube and the curvy tube, sausage tube. But anyway, they do split. They split up into two sausage tubes. Cool tunnel split. And the Dauntless goes right into the Borg space.
Yeah, this cube's sitting there waiting for him.
And then it's cool because he goes right towards one and then another cube kind of comes in and blocks it.
Yeah.
So he's surrounded by Borg cubes.
Yeah, it's
and he's sad. Yeah, the last shot of him sitting alone on the Dauntless Bridge. Very sad. He's resigned. He knows he's about to be assimilated.
He is. Poor Ray Wise.
Yeah. We have a shot of Voyager and Captain's log. She says, we rode the slipstream for an hour until it finally collapsed. And we've done some, you know, analysis and it's too dangerous to use this slipstream. We cannot do this again, but it got us 300 light years closer to home. Mm-hmm. So that's good news. We got a little closer.
Yeah.
And then we go to the holodeck and that's where Janeway and Seven play Velocity again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Seven wants to leave early so she can go back to work. And Janeway says, no, you can't leave. I ordered everybody to rest, to take a little break, to recover from this drama we've been through. But Seven reveals that she maybe can modify the slipstream to help them get home. And Janeway's like, wait, you want to go home? I thought you were, determined to stay here. And Seven says, no, I reevaluated things. And the idea of being a drone again is unappealing.
Yeah. So that's the resolution right there, right? That's the scene where we see that Seven's all on board and getting back to Earth now.
Mm-hmm. And then the captain smiles and says to the computer, okay, one more game.
And
we go off on them starting another game of Velocity.
And my takeaway is it's okay for the captain to say one more game. But when Seven says one more game, it's not so good from earlier.
Well, if you're on a recess break, everybody can play.
One more game's okay. So what is your lesson or your theme out of this episode?
This was a tough one because it was so dense, this episode, for me. I guess my theme would be don't ignore your instincts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your intuition actually is the word I'm looking for.
Yes. Or your gut, people have a gut feeling is the same thing as intuition. And that is the same theme that I have, that intuition is very powerful and intuition is something that you should not ignore.
Well, the funny thing about intuition though, like Seven says to Janeway that it's a human fallacy or whatever she says. Mm-hmm. I think intuition is powerful, but I think you should not ignore it. Mm-hmm. But I also don't think you should trust it completely, like trust but verify.
Yes, do your due diligence, but there's a reason. There's something about us as human beings, as beings of energy, where we sense the energy is off about something that we're about to embark upon or a decision we're about to make. Like something is just not right. It doesn't add up, right? And so you're correct. Don't trust it blindly. Do your due diligence, but definitely do not ignore it. Yeah. Do not ignore it.
Well, that's why, I mean, for Janeway, she had an instinct that something was off. There was lots of reasons for her just to be enthusiastic and say, yeah, let's go back home. Look, we got this Dauntless thing and Slipstream. Let's do it. But she had an instinct. She didn't stop pursuing the Dauntless, but she kept going back at that message and really looking deeper into it and realized the true story. So yeah, I thought that's my takeaway.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
On a scale of 1 to 10, the season finale of season 4, what would you give this one?
I'll give it a 6.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. Actually, I'll give it a 6.5 because I love the name Dauntless for a ship, for a starship. Too. So I'll give it 6.5.
Wow. This is a rare situation where I'm going to go 8.
You going higher?
What? I'm going to go strong.
Come on.
I am. I'm going to go a strong 8.
Are you going metric on me? Is this a metric thing? What's happening here?
It's this is straight up 1 to 10. It's an 8, solid 8.
What?
I'm tempted to go 8.5, but I would say 8.
Well, back it up. Why is it an 8 for you? I want to know.
I think it bought into the big idea of our show in a really great way, which is we're lost in the Delta Quadrant when we're trying to get home.
Okay.
This was huge in that mythology.
Yes.
I also thought the conflict between Seven and Janeway, which is now so central at this point in our series to the series, it's becoming a series about those two.
That
this sort of turning point for them, this kind of hitting a rock bottom with their relationship and things like that, and being able to turn it to some understanding, I felt a real victory there. I thought it involved our crew, all of us, in a decent way. It wasn't the best, but it was decent.
Okay.
I thought the set design and the shot making for the Dauntless and stuff that Rick Colby did, I thought it was all super strong. So
That's fine.
I'll give it an 8. I'm not going to go 8.5, but it's a solid 8.
Okay. This is a rare time where McNeil's rating is higher than mine.
I know.
So, all right.
Significantly higher.
Significantly. Yeah. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to our recap and discussion of Hope and Fear. Join us next week when Robbie and I embark on season 5, episode 1.
Wow.
Night. Yes.
All right.
It's so crazy. We're at 5 now. Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.